papyrus is the plant that was used to write on. And in these documents were about a little over 800 remedies, medical remedies, for different things. Salves, poultices, fumigations, inhalations, gargles, suppositories. It was just a bunch of things that came out of Egypt that were purported to be, here's the way you treat these things. And I want you to, I don't mean to gross anybody out, but I've got 8 or 10 of them to see what was considered leading science. If a patient has a splinter, wrap the worm blood in donkey dung because, wrap with worm blood and donkey dung because the pus that is formed is good for the patient. These are literally straight from these documents. To prevent hair from turning gray, anoint it with the blood of a black calf, which has been boiled in the fat of a rattlesnake. To prevent balding, mix together the fat of a horse, hippopotamus, a crocodile, a cat, a snake, and an ibex, and mix it in the tooth of a donkey crushed in honey. There's another one about hair growth. And these were to treat various skin diseases. Use a hog's tooth, a cat's dung, dog's dung, pound it and apply it as a poultice. Use the dried excrement of a child, the hog dung, a farmer's urine. For the treatment of sore eyes, use the urine of a faithful wife. Okay. Now, these were documents found which documented the best of science in that day and age. Okay, so it's really important you keep that in mind. Now, I'll just skip that one. Who do we know that was educated by the leading men in Egypt? Moses. How much of this kind of stuff do you read in Leviticus? You don't read any of that, do you? Why didn't Moses use that knowledge? You know, Stephen wrote, Moses was educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was powerful in speech and action. Why didn't Moses use what he wrote? It's pretty obvious, isn't it? For some reason, Moses knew better, okay? All right? And if you read, this is a quote, I forgot where I got, but I got a book written by a couple of doctors. It's about 30 years old now. But they just made the statement, there's not a single item in the books of Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy where any medical treatment would have been disadvantageous to a person. I mean, we may know today that something they did wouldn't be helpful, but there was nothing ridiculous like wrapping, you know, coating a sore or something with dung of an animal. You know, if anything, you know, that would kill you. You know, all the bacteria and stuff in dung of an animal. So, what did Moses teach about touching a dead body? What did Dr. Semmelweis, what were they doing for years back there in Vienna? They were handling dead bodies and doing what? Really doing nothing about it. But what did Moses say to do when you touch a dead body? Moses wrote in Numbers 19, "The one who touches the corpse of any person shall be unclean for 7 days. That one shall purify himself from uncleanness with the water on the third day, on the seventh day, blah, blah, blah." So Moses said, if you touch a corpse, you have to leave the camp for a week and you have to wash yourselves with this water, purify himself with the water on these 2 days. So how did Moses know that you needed to wash after you touched the corpse? How did he know that 3,500 years ago, when 3,300 years later, the leading scientists in the world weren't doing it? How did Moses know? Okay, that's the question. So what I want to look now is, well, we have a few minutes later, what was this water? What was in that water? Does anybody think they know what was in it, in that water? If you're over 100 years old, you would know. If your grandmother lived here in Texas 100 years ago, I guarantee you, she knew what was in that water. Okay, so we look at Numbers 19. Here's what Moses said to do. "Then the heifer shall be burned in his sight, its hide and its flesh and its blood, with its refuse shall be burned. The priest is to take some cedar wood, hyssop, and scarlet wool and throw them on the burning heifer. The priest shall then wash his clothes and bathe his body in the water and afterward come into the camp." So does anybody know what that recipe is for? Your grandmother, your great-grandmother, my great-grandmother would know, I guarantee you. So what do? We combine the following into water: ashes of a red heifer, cedar wood, hyssop, scarlet wool. That makes lye soap. That is the ingredients for Lysol. Sister Goff is shaking her head. I know she's not old enough to have done it, but I guarantee you her mother did. I guarantee you. That is what makes lye soap. You go to the internet, you look up lye soap, and you take fat from an animal, you mix it with the ashes of wood, and that makes lye soap. So anyway, that's how you make lye soap. So how did Moses know to tell the priest to wash their body and clothes with lye soap, when only 150 years ago they didn't know anything about it? How did he know? You tell me that, okay? And just look at some of these ingredients. Cedar, long been used for storage cabinets because of its ability to repel insects, prevent decay. Cedar is rich in vitamin C. There's a lot of good things about cedar. It said it was used to treat scurvy, and it led to that tree's being called the Tree of Life. In one book I was reading, and I think I know the gentleman that made the statement, he said that, in our digestive system, we have bacteria, right? Because if you don't have a certain amount of bacteria, your food isn't digested correctly. And this veterinarian said cedar contains certain bactericides. And he said that when food is scarce, Texas deer have been known to eat cedar bark, and it kills them because it kills the bacteria in their stomach and they can't digest their food. They starve to death. And it's not because the cedar in itself kills them, it's because they can't digest the food. So cedar has got antibacterial aspects of it. Hyssop, because we added cedar and hyssop and scarlet wool. What is hyssop? Well, Listerine contains thymol, an antibacterial agent which comes from hyssop. And who here remembers Listerine logo? You take Listerine, it does what? Remember? I know y'all remember that. Kills germs, it can cause bad breath. Listerine kills bad breath, right? Because it's got thymol in it. Hyssop has thymol. Hyssop was an antibacterial agent. How did Moses know that? So scarlet wool. How many of you today, how many men here, how many in here today are wearing wool today? Why not? Brian is. Why aren't people wearing wool today? There's a good reason. Why not? What does it feel like in the summertime? It's hot, it's itchy, it's scratchy. So if you put wool in soap, what does it turn it into? Who uses lava soap when you get your hands good and dirty, right? It makes it scratchy, right? Rough. So scholars think that the scarlet wool actually just made it kind of rough and itchy to help clean better. So what you got here is 3,300 years before Louis Pasteur. How did Moses know not to touch a corpse? How did he know to wash with soap to remove germs? How did he know how to make soap? How did he know that said cedar is a bactericide, that hyssop kills germs, and you know the secret of lava soap? How did Moses know that? There's no way Moses could have known that, unless you know everybody was smart back then, and you know we've lost all that knowledge. You know, was it a lucky guess? You know, I don't think so. And we got a few minutes more, and we got a couple more of these. I'll whip through them real quick. Vitamin K is used by the liver to make prothrombin, which helps blood clot. Okay? Vitamin K. The K comes from a Dutch word, which we get a word coagulant from. So vitamin K helps blood clot. Okay? If you don't have any vitamin K in your system and you get cut, you're probably in serious trouble. Nowadays, doctors understand this, and newborn babies, in many areas, newborn babies are given vitamin K at an early age just to prevent problems if they happen to hemorrhage or anything. So vitamin K helps blood clot. In a human, vitamin K in an infant, compared to average adult levels, is low. Okay, but it grows naturally during the first week of the life of a human baby. Vitamin K increases, and in fact, the most vitamin K a baby will ever have is when it's between 7 and 9 days old. Okay? So you look at this chart here. So here's the typical available prothrombin, which produces vitamin K. It's at its maximum at about 7 days, and at about 9 days, it drops down, and it's at the peak, which it'll be for a normal human. But for a typical baby, or for a typical human, the most vitamin K that baby will have in its system is around the 8th day. Does that ring a bell to anybody? Bill?
Circumcision,
exactly. How did Moses know if you're going to circumcise a baby to do it on the 8th day? Because that is the peak day for circumcising a baby that doesn't have unnatural amounts of vitamin K added because of, you know, medicine or whatever. How in the world could he have known that? He couldn't have known that. There's no way he could have known that. You know, the Bible, Moses wrote about, you know, if you had a certain diseases like leprosy, you had to get outside the camp. In other words, get away from people. We would call that quarantine. You know, the old law talked about quarantining people to get them away so they didn't have a disease. If they got near anybody, they were to cover their mouth and cry out, unclean, unclean. Why would you cover your mouth? Well, you know, and I know. But how did they know? They couldn't have known, right? In the book, The Encyclopedia of Medical History, Mr. Roderick McGrew wrote, "The idea of contagion or contagious diseases was foreign to the classic medical tradition and found no place in the voluminous writings of the father of Western medicine, Hippocrates." In other words, Hippocrates, you've heard of the Hippocratic Oath. He's the father of Western medicine. He wrote nothing about contagious diseases. They didn't know anything about them, right? Yet the Old Testament, however, is a rich source for contagious sentiment, especially in regard to leprosy and venereal diseases. You know, how did Moses know? The only logical conclusion is some supernatural source told Moses what to say. What else could it be? He knew too many things. He wrote too many things. There were centuries, you know, centuries ahead of their time. How could he have known that? So what? This is my kind of conclusion statement. So what? These are only a few of the items. There's tons of other evidence in the Bible. There's other medical evidence. There's other geographical evidence, cosmological evidence. There's lots of evidence in the Bible that you can go to that when you look at it, you say, there's no way that guy could have known that. They couldn't have known that because modern day scientists of that generation would not have known that kind of information. So there's all kind of evidence in the Bible. And as parents, your children need to know that because they're going to be blasted by their biology teachers saying that scientists know evolution's true. Too many of them believe it. It must be true. Well, I'm here to tell you, science can be wrong and it has been wrong. God does not demand blind faith. And again, the leading scientists of the day were wrong. So I guess the bottom line question is, clearly Moses was inspired by God. You know, to me, that's a given. There's too much evidence. Moses knew things the men of his day couldn't have known. Well, Moses was inspired by God. God inspired the rest of the Bible. God talks about a judgment day. So my question to you here today is, if Moses could be inspired, is it probable or likely or is it possible that the rest of the Bible is inspired? If it is inspired, if you're not a Christian, that should trouble you. Because God writes about, or God inspired men to write about a judgment day that's coming when every knee will bow and every one of us will bow before God and we will receive our just reward. So if you're not prepared for judgment day, I'd encourage you to do something about it. We'd like to help you if we can. And if there's anything in your life that you need to take care of a spiritual nature, we invite you to come now to the front as we stand and sing.